Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you to end the week as usual. Jim, this is a story that's gotten some attention, especially inside the Beltway, but not a lot given all the scandals and other issues going on in the last couple of weeks. And that is that the Senate Democrats now are all upset with a few of the Tea Party Republicans for stalling the conference process on the House and Senate conference on the budget resolutions. The likes of Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and some others on the Republican side want to make absolutely sure that there's not some sort of debt ceiling increase deal snuck into this resolution, even though it wasn't part of either resolution in the House or Senate. For some reason, John McCain is the point man for defending the regular conference process. Here's a couple of his exchanges in the last couple of days, first with Mike Lee and then with Ted Cruz.
If the senator from Utah wants to get rid of the, quote, back room, all of the other adjectives and adverbs that he used, then what is the process? What is the process? How do we reconcile legislation that's passed by one body and the other body? That's what we've been doing for a couple of hundred years.
Proceeding to a secret closed-door backroom 11th hour deal, we're told, is the way the process works. It's the way the Senate works. It's the way the House works. It's the way Washington works. We know this. That's why we're objecting. In case nobody has noticed, the way Washington works stinks.
Basically, what we're saying here on this side of the aisle is we don't trust our colleagues on the other side of the Capitol who are in the majority of Republicans.
The senior senator from Arizona urged this body to trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans likewise don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats, because it is leadership in both parties that has gotten us in this mess.
So, Jim, you got one Tea Party senator there saying that people don't trust Congress, another one saying that the way Washington works stinks. I'm pretty sure they're not the people that the American people would consider crazy here.
You know, it's kind of interesting to hear John McCain going on about the excessive adjectives and adverbs in the I wonder if the hobbits agree with that. You know, John McCain, because hyperbole has never been one of some sort of thing that John McCain would dabble in. You know, I look at the what you might call the Tea Party guys, or the Angry Birds Caucus, or whatever John McCain was calling them before. Crazy birds, wacko birds,
there you go.
I think they're just trying to drive a hard bargain. I think they basically see this as an opportunity to try to, you know, get as much serious examination of the spending process as possible and where the government can cut as they can. And they want to use the leverage of the raising the debt ceiling to do it. And I think that, you know, it strikes me as smart politics. And to use a line McCain is fond of, Congress's approval rating is down to blood relatives and paid staff. Saying that, you know, the traditional methods of conference committee generally aren't very good for these sorts of things, because when one party wants X and another party wants Y in spending fights, traditionally the way they resolve it is to buy both X and Y. You know, why buy one when you can buy two for the price of two? And that's kind of how we've gotten into this. So I can't begrudge the Wacko Birds Caucus their skepticism of the conference process. And it's really good to hear Ted Cruz kind of, you know, saying that, look, Republicans have some responsibility for how this entire process has played out and the running up of this deficit. Somebody's got to be the bad cop. Somebody's got to be the ones who are really going to, you know, put the screws to the administration and to the congressional Democrats to say, look, we're serious about deficit reduction. This idea that we're in the neighborhood of only $600 billion or only $700 billion this year, the idea that this lessens the pressure to address the debt crisis is kind of silly. I think these guys deserve some applause for trying to push for the best deal they can get.
Real quick, not to pile on John McCain, but he had another statement in here that I think a lot of people, especially with Obama in the White House and Democrats running the Senate, should be a little bit careful of.
We're here to vote. We're not here to block things. We're here to articulate our positions on the issues in the best and possible and most eloquent way we can, and do what we can for the good of the country, and then let the process move forward.
No, actually, I think a lot of people are there to block things. If they're bad things, then that we think would be bad for the country.
Yeah, if you vote no, that's blocking it, isn't it?
I would think so.
Everyone likes to believe that, you know, what I'm doing is the noble work of the country, and you guys are just playing politics. And that's, you know, Obama's favorite term, and it's kind of it's a fairly ridiculous way of looking at political disputes. And I have all the noble motives, and you guys are just pursuing your own partisan interests and stuff. Disappointing, but not terribly surprising to see McCain dabbling back in his old mavericky ways.
No, not at all. And good foreshadowing on Obama, by the way. That's coming up a little bit later. On to the bad martini now, Jim. And in the last several days, Attorney General Eric Holder has vowed to get to the bottom of the IRS scandal. He says he recused himself from the Associated Press scandal with his own Justice Department. He told the House Judiciary Committee that he can't remember signing off on any sort of effort to snoop into the personal emails and phone records of reporters. Well, apparently his memory is just as lousy as everyone who works at the IRS, because now it was just reported yesterday that, in fact, Eric Holder did personally sign off on all of those efforts to get a warrant to snoop on the personal emails and phone records of James Rosen, his bosses, his parents, and all sorts of other things. So another day, another Eric Holder statement not matching up to the facts.
Not matching up with the facts. He was under oath when he first said that he had no familiarity with these sorts of circumstances because he'd recused himself. Well, now we go and find out, no, no. In fact, he had done this exact sort of thing to James Rosen. And as I laid out in the Morning Jolt today, occasionally, and most folks on the right seem to recognize that this is a big deal. There are a few folks who kind of see this and kind of roll their eyes and say, you know, this is the press just worrying about this sort of thing. It's more than that. And basically what it is, you know, I kind of addressed this in previous Three Martini Lunges, but just to emphasize, traditionally, if you leak classified information, the crime is committed by the leaker, not the reporter who takes the information and publishes it. And while we have had judges back during the Pentagon Papers put injunctions on publishing information, they've never said to a reporter, I'm going to put you in jail for reporting this. Well, now that door is open because of the actions of Eric Holder in the James Rosen case. This is not a minor one. Conspiracy can get you 5 years in jail and $250,000 fine. Now, Rosen is not charged with a crime. I really should emphasize yet. But it really is a circumstance in which, you know, who knows what the next prosecutor is going to do, be it the local level, state level, or some U.S. attorney at some point, or the next attorney general of the United States. I mean, you basically have now made it a crime to not just be the leaker, but to be the person who receives the leak. And that, if somebody emails you classified information, have you committed a crime by receiving the email, by reading the email? All kinds of prosecutions that are not previously acceptable. And I think it's a dangerous move, and Holder really does deserve it. Kind of fascinating to see the Huffington Post, of all places, calling for Holder's resignation. I don't think you're going to see Holder resign. But it is kind of nice to see a broader bipartisan agreement that this is, you know, this is a Department of Justice that is now basically out of control and not seeing any limits on its prosecutorial authority.
I was speaking about this earlier in the week with a retired FBI special agent who was part of the Iran-Contra investigation. And he said back then, a generation ago, they were looking specifically for the leaker. There was not even any mention, much less anybody caring who might have actually received that information. So it just shows you how things can change over time and certainly how they change depending on who's in a position of power. On to martini number three now. And Jim, yesterday, the president gave a much-touted speech on his new policy in the war on terror. One of the things is it's not going to be a global war on terror anymore. We're going to ratchet it down and go after pockets of extremists here and there. He talked about restricting the drone program. He then got around to, once again, how he wants to close Guantanamo Bay. But then he got an unexpected interruption.
No justification beyond politics for Congress to prevent us from closing a facility that should have never been opened. Today, let me finish, ma'am. Good. So today, once again, today, I'm about to address it, ma'am, but you got to let me speak. I'm about to address it. Let me address it. Why don't you let me address it, ma'am? Why don't you sit down, and I will tell you exactly what I'm going to do.
That was Medea Benjamin, one of the leaders of Code Pink. Jim, in one sense, it's probably good that the Democrats finally get a taste of the craziness that is Code Pink, even though they basically, I think, agree on the issue. But the sad thing is that it kind of distracted away from what Obama was just saying there, and that's that if you're opposed to bringing all these horrible people from Guantanamo Bay into the United States, only politics can be the reason for your opposition to that.
There's that, yeah, which is easy to get lost in the shuffle there. First of all, Medea Benjamin, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, huh, Greg? Because for starters, here she has a president who has actually pledged to do exactly what... Now, she has the gripe of he hasn't done it yet, and that's a perfectly legitimate gripe. And it almost makes it sound like every statement from, and promise from Barack Obama comes with an expiration date. If only someone had been pointing this out in 2007, 2008. What makes her not the sharpest knife in the drawer is not her failure to read me and to heed my warnings and such. First of all, how does this Code Pink manage to get into all of these events? Like, you would figure this would be a woman who, like, on every presidential event, every political event, how does Code Pink manage to get into these things? And secondly, to be a member of Code Pink, you have to be really, really committed to two things. One, the color pink. And then two, the idea that nothing should get done. Because basically these people are quasi-professional hecklers. They just show up and start shouting. And, you know, it's not like they've ever... I don't think anyone has ever had their mind changed. I've been at a couple events when Code Pinkers have done this sort of thing, and you can just see in the press corps, everybody kind of rolls their eyes up, here we go again. And we have to wait for security to come and bring them away. And then they say, oh, security oppressed me. But you were screaming when somebody was trying to give a speech. This is not the heckler's veto. I have a moment of genuine sympathy for President Obama because, one, here she is demanding that he do exactly what he's about to promise to do again. Why is your notion of free speech that you're being able to shout somebody down? Now, I mean, my attitude is, if somebody says something you don't like, you can boo. Jay Nordlinger of National Review has a strong objection to hissing. He thinks that's a very uncouth, uncivilized thing to do, which is fine. But I think if a politician gives a speech and he says something you don't like, you're allowed to react. And, the idea that, remember when Supreme Court Justice Alito shook his head and said not true in response to the president's State of the Union speech. And everyone, oh, what a breach of decorum. And look, right. You don't have to stay there stone-faced. And Medea Benjamin thinks that, Obama's, saying is, not true. She can, make her own reactions to it, but let the president of the United States speak. We are a country of laws and decorum and such. So I just don't understand the purpose of Code Pink. And I kind of wonder if, there'd be some, whether we could reach a broad bipartisan consensus that when somebody comes to speak someplace, you can react to what they say, but let them speak and let them finish and let them, say their piece. And then you get to say your piece in response. And it was kind of, Code Pink is just basically, anarchism or hooliganism masquerading as political activism.
Yeah, I think we can reach a bipartisan consensus that Code Pink is crazy. I don't think that's too hard to reach, and I'm pretty sure the Democrats now would go along with that. So, I mean, they really let her go a long time. I don't know where the Secret Service was, but there was basically a back and forth at one point that we didn't even get time to play, but she went on for several minutes. Crazy. And appropriately in the crazy martini. So, Jim, we certainly salute all those who have worn the uniform of the United States. We pay special tribute to those who gave their lives and service of the country this weekend, and honor their families as we observe this upcoming Memorial Day. And we will not have podcast on Monday, and I will be out next week. Brett Winterbull will be in for me, but Jim will be around. So please come back Tuesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.